everybody, and welcome to Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. We are in Season 2, Episode 5, and it is time for the final four in our Guilty Pleasures category. These are films that Eric and I chose as our Guilty Pleasures, movies that we like that maybe we necessarily shouldn't or should like, but might get teased or bullied for liking these films. Who knows? But we picked those. We had each had our own bracket. And let's take a look at that bracket, by the way. This is how it started. Started with 8 movies enter, 2 movies leave. Well, 1 movie will leave at the end of this. On the left side, if you're watching on the live stream on YouTube or Twitch or Facebook Live, on the left side is Eric's bracket. On the right side is Greg's bracket. And you will see where we're at. With Eric's bracket, we have Moulin Rouge and Legally Blonde left. And on Greg's side, we have Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping, and Deep Blue Sea. It's been an interesting set of movies. I think we've had a good time with this. It's not like our normal thing where the movies kind of all relate to one another and you have something to compare them to.
We've had to stretch and bend all of the rules as we go through voting for these things, because what we like used as our baseline for one set just wouldn't quite work for a different one. So that has been challenging. And just, you know, we're going to go through tonight and we're going to put up a Lonely Island kind of mockumentary up against kind of a culty sci-fi throwback to Jaws. And so we're, you have to compare similarities, right? Of which there are very, very few. So we'll just have to see how it goes. I'm excited to do it.
Yeah. And you know, Guilty Pleasures, when we came up with this category, it was kind of like, these are movies that we really enjoy that you wouldn't think we would enjoy. But I was looking at a list of like other people's Guilty Pleasures just out of curiosity. And there was some, most of them were like really bad movies. Like I had Roller Boogie on. That's probably the only one. And maybe Spin Out. You could probably call that a bad movie. I don't. But Roller Boogie is definitely like a bad movie that I love. And so you get that guilty pleasure feeling. So maybe we do another one down the road where we do really bad movies that Eric and I love. I saw Xanadu on the list. And I was like, you know what? I forgot about Xanadu. I might have put Xanadu on the list if I'd thought about it.
I don't think we have room in our lives for another 70s roller skating.
But it is. It would have
extravaganza.
It would have gone perfect with
if roller. If we find 6 more, then we've got a whole skating. Well, Blades of Glory.
Yeah.
Is about skating.
Ooh. What's the Jagged Edge? What is the one with the ice skating? The
Tonya Harding chick?
Well, that's one, but there's one where it's the girl's trying to skate in the Olympics and she gets the doofy boy to be her partner. It's something Edge.
She's All That Too.
I think it's The Cutting Edge. I'm not sure. It's Jagged Edge, I think, is like a Glenn Close and Michael Douglas thriller, but I think Cutting Edge is the one. If you're out there in watching the live stream, help me out with that. I see Mike's out there already. In the chat, so we'll say hi to Mike. Hi, Mike, and everybody else that's joined us. But yeah, if you remember that movie, it was like a 90s film with ice skating. That's another one. But also with Xanadu, we do have a category coming up later in the season of bizarre musicals that kind of fit in there as well, because it is a strange film. But I mean,
you seem hell bent on getting this thing shoehorned in.
So I do like it.
Wherever you decide to put it is okay with me.
I will.
Dude, gross. What a weird thing to say out of context.
I just got that. Oh, very nice. Yeah, no, but I was just going to say, anytime I could squeeze Olivia Newton-John into anything and watch her for a couple hours, I'm good with that.
Squeeze her into some latex and some roller skates.
Rest in peace.
Spandex, not latex. Oh, she died?
Yeah, she passed away.
Well,
yeah, Mike says Blades of Glory. Yeah, that's a skating film, but we were thinking of one in particular. It's like a romantic comedy, but I can't remember the name of it. But I think it's Cutting Edge. I'm almost positive it's Cutting Edge.
All right,
great. Somebody go to IMDb and Google cutting edge and let me know what you see. But yeah, so I did want to mention to you that, yeah, I'm really tired. And that's why I'm kind of punchy right now, because I went to we went to a concert last night. So
who did you go see last night?
I went to see Rob Thomas.
Any word from the rest of the Matchbox 20 guys?
No, they did not show.
But Fred and Barry and, and whoever.
And Barney.
But no, he was okay, really speaking good. Of Rob Thomas, I'm trying to catch up on my Rolling Stone subscription over here. How do you think that this new Rob Thomas / Santana thing is going to work out?
Are they doing a new thing other than Smooth?
No, I'm trying to catch up on my subscription. This issue is from like 20 years ago. Do you think it's going to go well? Do you think they're going to sell any albums or win any Grammys?
Yeah.
What's your prediction?
I think that song is going to be huge. It's going to be everywhere. In fact, he said last night during the show, before he played it, that everywhere he goes, whether you're in an airport, you still hear it. It's like 20 plus years down the road, and you still hear this song everywhere. So yeah, it was a good show.
I'd like to show you a picture of my mansion in Malibu that I bought because of this one song.
Yeah,
because it's so smooth.
It is smooth, and it's one of those things that he'll be fine for. His kids are set for life with just one song, and he has other songs too. Show was really good. He only did like a couple Matchbox 20, but you know, I knew what I was getting into. I knew I was going to see just Rob Thomas, but it was a good show. I just got in late. Then my dogs got me up at 4 a.m. to go out. They now got into their heads, you know, after the time change and stuff, that 4 is the time they're supposed to get up and go outside. So I get up, then I can't get back to sleep. So
wasn't
I'm a little
time punchy. Change a while ago.
It's been ever since the time change.
Fucking dogs get their shit together.
And what my fear is, what we're going to fall back here in a little while, and it's going to get worse. They're going to get up at 3.
Oh, and then the next time you spring forward, it'll be 2.
Yeah, it'll just be pretty soon. I'll be just letting them out and then going to bed for an hour, getting them right back up.
Reverse cycling, I think is what they call it.
So Mike verified for me on IMDb, it is the cutting edge. So again, if we decided to do skate movies, and there's let's do Battle Creek Brawl, where Jackie Chan is a roller derby. Oh, and then there's roller derby movies. There's Whip It. See, there's stuff out there.
Rollerblading. I'm sure when that first hit the scene, there had to have been some ninjas on fucking rollerblades or something.
I bet you there's some good rollerblading
like
movies.
90s, like rad, super rad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brink.
They got Brink. I don't remember that one. Claude Debussy, 69. Love that.
It's Debussy.
It's a B, dude.
Oh, Claude. Claude Debussy, I think.
Claude Debussy.
He is a composer.
Yes. And apparently he did the 69th.
Claude Debussy.
The 69th Symphony.
What was it? Released on April 20th, right?
Yep.
Okay. I get where you're coming from. Yeah, Greg, I today is a tough day, so let's if we get through this without any more crying today, I think I'll call that a win.
Yeah, and I get you.
We'll just make it.
We're going to make it. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to debate these final four films until there is one standing and we declare the best Guilty Pleasures movie out of this bracket. And then after that, we are going to reveal the films in our next category, which is going to be the best movies about bands that don't really exist or fake bands. Bands that are just created for the movies.
Okay, I'm reading. I'm reading about Brink.
Oh, okay. Yeah, what is it?
I don't know. You tell me if this sounds like something that's up your alley.
Oh, I'm sure. I like a lot of things up my
alley. Andy Brink Brinkler.
Nice.
And his inline skating crew, Peter, Jordy, and Gabriella, who call themselves the Soul Skaters.
I already love it.
It means that they skate for the fun of it and not for the money.
Ooh.
They clash with a group of sponsor skaters. They probably skate for the money and not for the fun of it, called Team Jesus fucking Christ. called Team X Blades, but the Blades is with a Z.
Oh, nice. Oh, I love this. Why have I not seen this movie?
Brink discovers that his family's in financial trouble. I mean, he goes against his wishes. Oh, and he joins Team X Blades.
Ooh.
This, God, he's just living life one day at a time, Greg.
Dude, and I see roller, I see skating movies in our
future. We should all be so lucky to live that way.
Yeah.
Just carefree.
That's awesome.
And okay.
I love it. I am already writing down skating movies for season three. That's gonna be
like in 98. I mean, I had just turned 21, so it's probably not a surprise that this missed me with Brink in 1998. But yeah. And you had just turned 35, so I'm sure you missed it too.
Yeah, I had not just turned. I would say 27 at that time, so I was doing other things.
Old though.
You know what? At that time, my kids were very little, so I was watching a lot of Disney films that weren't. This one, Claude said, was a Disney movie, but I didn't watch this one, but we watched all the animated ones. So that was my life, watching Aladdin and Lion King over and over and over again in the 90s. That was pretty much how life went. But
yeah. Okay. Well, right. We'll put this one in our pocket. Yeah, my kids are little right now, and they started back to school today, and, you know, that just sent me down a vortex of emotions and, you know,
it's a big day. Always a big day every year. Yeah.
And Eller just like walked in and broed it up and would only let us go so far before he was I went to give him a hug and he just like threw his chin up. Like, later, dude. And just like walked out.
That's great.
I don't know, man. It's fine. it's like, all right, cool guy. And then he gets out of school and wants to go with his homies, you know?
Right.
So that's fine. He'll be in middle school next year. So this is his last year of elementary school. Wow. Right?
Yeah.
Shit's
what do they say? They grow up fast.
But I just, when I say you're significantly older than me, I just need you to know that I've got a kid in first grade and you've got a kid who just had a kid. So that's why it feels like.
It does. Well, you know what the funny thing was when I got married to my wife, she had a plan. She told me, she said that I want to have kids now. I want to have three years apart so that by the time that one's three, then we have the next one and I can manage it better. And damned if she didn't do it. The woman, when she sets her mind to do something, she does exactly what she wants to do. And I had no control over the situation, but we had three kids, 3 years apart, within the first 9 years of our marriage, 10 years of our marriage.
It feels like you had some control over it.
You
never heard of the pull-out method?
Very little control in this guy right here. Very little
control. Not really known for my control.
No, not at all. But anyway, all right, let's crown a winner in these guilty pleasures movies.
Yeah.
We're going to start with my side of the bracha. And we got Popstar going up against Deep Blue Sea. So we just did Deep Blue Sea the last episode. Mm-hmm. And it was we loved it. I loved it.
I was pleasantly surprised that Deep Blue Sea took the time to acknowledge to itself and to us that you don't have to take this seriously. We're not here for that because you can get into some stories like that. And they weaved enough of this Alzheimer's study story into it and this evil scientist thing, and you can fall victim to taking yourself more seriously because maybe that you're trying to make a stand against experimental medical testing or at least the ethics thereof or whatever else, and this happens. Who gross, edit that out.
Did you just burp?
Yes. Fucking gross. Nice. Some movies fall victim to that, and it wasn't like 5 or 10 minutes in where I went, oh, okay. Well, okay, once I saw Samuel L. Jackson show up, I knew I didn't have to take the movie seriously. That's good.
Yep.
He's kind of a bell cow for that kind of thing. He shows up anymore because he's just kind of become kind of like Nicolas Cage or something. Like when I see that guy,
right?
If it's not like Leaving Las Vegas or whatever that movie was from 30 years ago, then I know I don't have to take Nick Cage seriously, and that's great. So I was appreciative of that. So once you get past that barrier and it happens quick, that was so enjoyable. Listen, movie where a shark pulls a helicopter into the water, into the ocean, via a stretcher attached to a cable. I'm fucking in because why wouldn't you be?
Poor Stellan Skarsgård, man. That has to be one of the craziest deaths in cinema history. Strapped to a stretcher with a rebreather on, and the cable that they're trying to hoist him up into the helicopter, it kind of dips him like a tea bag, just daring the shark to just come and chomp on him, and it gets a hold of that stretcher, drags him underneath the water, and then slams him up against this thick glass where everybody's watching him get hammered repeatedly with this rebreather on. It is really a sight in this film. And when you see stuff like that, you know that Deep Blue Sea is not to be taken seriously. What's great is it does this thing where it kind of acts like it, you should, but everything is tongue in cheek.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing like everybody's a Leslie Nielsen in this film. You know, like Leslie Nielsen did Police Squad and Airplane, and he always delivered his lines with complete and utter seriousness, but yet they were hilarious. And I think this movie is like the Leslie Nielsen of shark movies. It is played straight, but there are so many jokes if you just pay attention.
And the one time that I thought the movie might be trying to take a turn towards some like modicum of seriousness, fucking Samuel L. Jackson gets bit in half, like halfway through the monologue. So that was a really fun one. I can see why it's one of your guilty pleasures, because if this is on and you're just in the mood to, again, I think that maybe one of the common threads of this topic that we chose is they're kind of low impact, right? Or at least most of them are. They don't require you to sit down and be a part of it. The experience of these movies, I mean, maybe Moulin Rouge is the exception to this, but for the most part anyway.
Right.
And, you know, this one beat out Spin Out Baby?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beat out Elvis.
The only thing worse than that movie was the soundtrack to that movie.
All right, let's not bring that up again. That's a touchy subject with me. I love that movie, so.
Okay, I'm sorry. is that the album that has Suspicious Minds on it?
It is not.
Love Me Tender?
Nope.
Not In the Ghetto?
It has Smorgasbord. Did you like what I texted you, me actually listening to the soundtrack on my record?
Yes. And just because I didn't respond, don't take that personally. You know by now I don't respond to shit.
The funny thing was is we had done the movie. I had the soundtrack out, so I put it on the record player, completely forgetting about Smorgasbord. I just put it on, and it came on, and I just started laughing. And then I was like, I immediately thought of you, and I had to play that. But
Mike says, I almost feel like Eric does about Beetlejuice about this film. I can see why others like it, but it doesn't hit for me. Okay, listen, Mike. Here's the big fucking difference between liking Big Blue Sea, Deep Blue Sea, and Beetlejuice is that everybody acts like people like love the smell of their own fucking farts watching Beetlejuice. And everyone is convinced that they have to find it fucking funny because everybody else says it's funny. But I think it was just like one guy said it was funny. And then someone else wanted that guy to think they were cool, and so they're like, oh yeah, Beetlejuice, that movie was super funny. And it just spread. Like, you ever seen what was that, World War Z, where it just like becomes this global apocalypse of zombies, and that's what it is. People who like Beetlejuice, like, got their fucking brains bit by a zombie, and it made them, like, believe that the most unfunny fucking piece of shit movie that ever existed somehow is funny. That's the difference, because Deep Blue Sea isn't trying to be all that, and people don't turn backwards so far that their head is up their own fucking ass to try to convince others that that movie's funny. I rest my case.
Yeah. And so, Mike, I think we've learned that, like, in, you mentioned the movie Encanto that you're watching with your kids all the time. We don't talk about, Bruno is in that film, we don't talk about Beetlejuice with Eric anymore. This is why we
the
can't
talk about... The dinner scene in Beetlejuice is pretty funny.
That's what Claude said, yes.
Yeah, okay, don't, the, please don't take that out of context, because I'm not saying that. Somebody said that.
Yeah, it's in the comments. The dinner scene's pretty funny. Yes, it is funny. I like
Beetlejuice. That's the least funny part of that movie.
Oh, it's great.
Is that, that's Deo? That's,
yes.
No, man, fuck that. That is the stupidest shit. It made a movie that was already fucking dumb 1,000 times dumber. Watch, I'm telling you.
You just hit the nerve. It's, we don't talk about this movie.
I already had a bad fucking day. I don't need this shit. Beetlejuice bullshit.
But here's the thing is Deep Blue Sea. Yeah, if it doesn't hit for you, cool. It's cool. That's the thing about guilty pleasures. It's Deep Blue Sea overall, I don't think it's one that a lot of people mention as one of their favorites. It happens to be one of mine because I was a big Jaws fan. And I think and we brought this up during the episode we did on this, is that huge Jaws fan, loved the original, watched them all. Of course, the outside of the first one, the others aren't as, they steadily get worse. Two is okay. Three is mediocre to bad. And four is just absolute dog shit. But I love them all. I still watch them. And what I enjoyed about Deep Blue Sea is how they call back to all of the Jaws films. They have little bits and pieces and Easter eggs from all of them, because it was heavily inspired by that, but amped to the 10th degree. So the first time I watched it, all of that just came out, and I laughed through the whole thing. And it was the fact that they play it serious when it's clearly a comedy. A lot of people don't get that it's a comedy, but yeah, it's okay to not to like it. So,
no, it's not.
It's okay. You can like what you like or what you don't like.
Matters of personal taste.
It does, but I do enjoy it. And I think the sad part about Deep Blue Sea and are in this bracket is it's going up against a film that is really
hilarious.
A laugh every single minute. It really is. And pop star never stopped. And if you like The Lonely Island, you'll adore this movie. It's going to be one of your favorites. If you like Andy Samberg, then you're going to like this movie. You may not love it as much if you don't get the Lonely Island type sense of humor, but this is filled with Lonely Island SNL digital short type humor.
It's zany, and it's got that, it's self-aware comedy. Like The Lonely Island is known for those music videos, like I Just Had Sex with Akon, taking things very literal. A lot of it is dry, and I feel like you could watch this 10 times once a day over 10 days and find something new to laugh at every single time, because it happens fast too. And I'm still laughing about something they said 20 seconds ago. Yeah. And I'm sure they've dropped another, you know, just one liner. Samberg playing this kind of overly juvenile, unself-aware character.
Yeah.
And he's great at it. He's just kind of, he's able to play the role of a doofus, like, really, really well. And I mean, for all I fucking know, Andy Samberg went to Juilliard or whatever.
No idea.
I doubt that. But
didn't
he classmates with Ashton Kutcher?
Didn't Robin Williams go to Juilliard? So, you know, you don't know.
So, it's possible that he's just a brilliant, brilliant actor. Yeah. I don't know, but Lonely Island have a way of pulling together those three guys. I mean, they must get in a room and it must just be fucking magic. Like, I don't, man, that much talent and pulling off a movie that easily could have been really, really stupid, like Beetlejuice. And instead, I think it's brilliant. I'm so happy that you picked this movie. It probably of the eight that we watched, and of course, I've got my side of the bracket with movies I already know I like.
Yeah.
But I probably enjoyed watching that one the most of the eight. Like, the experience of it was far and away, like, above the experience of watching any of the others, especially Spin Out.
You just have to keep going back. That's just your way, and I love you for it. I love
you today. I'm sorry.
Here, it's all good. So that's the thing, is it, Mike makes a comment that he loves pop stars, his wife hates it. I can see that. I mean, it is more tends to lean for the guy side of humor.
Mm-hmm.
My wife watched it with me. She doesn't watch it with me when I watch it, because Lonely Island is one of those things. Now, here's the thing. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Andy Samberg, we watched the entire run of that, and that was one of our favorite sitcoms. Loved it from beginning to end. But Lonely Island is one of those things where maybe it's because they up the vulgarity level, you know, a lot of the stuff, or maybe it's because they play that stupid character, and my wife doesn't find stupidity funny as much as guys do. Guys, I love stupidity. You know, that's why they made Dumb and Dumber. That's why they made The Jerk.
She married you.
Exactly. Well, you'd think that she would love stupidity.
That's what I mean. There's got to be an exception
that proves the rule. I
don't get it. Yeah.
So, but yeah, so it is a amazing film. It's one of those that really doesn't get old, like you said, because you can watch it over and over, and you're not going to pick up on every single thing. And if you watch it, like, say, just a few months from the first time you watch it, it's going to be almost as funny as the first time you watch it.
The only critique I might have of it, it might be twofold. It's probably polarizing, because unless you have an appreciation for, like you said, kind of vulgar or kind of gross out comedy, you may not enjoy this.
Mm-hmm.
And the only other one I could even possibly think of is that, okay, it's formulaic. It's supposed to be. We're not making high art here. It probably, if you watch this in 5 years or 10 years, I bet it starts to become really of its time.
Mm. The
jokes are real. But, I mean, that's just a perceived critique, you know, that may or may not happen in the future. But I could see that the references start to become, they're funny now because they're so current and we're all kind of aware of the pop culture zeitgeist that kind of is why that joke is funny now. And in 10 years, someone new watching it won't have the same context. And then all of us will have forgotten because we'll just be 10 years older, you know? And so, like, why is a joke about R. Kelly funny, you know, or whatever? That's reaching to just find a nit that needs to be picked, or, you know, because if you just sit down and watch this movie, I can't imagine a person being able to get through the whole thing and not laughing a dozen times.
Yeah.
And I could even see somebody laughing a dozen times and at the end going, I mean, I didn't really love that, but it was funny, and that'd be okay.
Yep. My wife is like that. She found some funny moments that she really enjoyed, but there are other parts that she would tune out for. But the thing about it is the cultural reference that you bring up is very important, because part of it was made when Justin Bieber was coming up and he had the documentary movie it wasn't never stop, never stopping, but it was never give up or whatever. You know, it was similar. So that's why the title is Never Stop, Never Stopping. And so they had the Justin Bieber film, and it was kind of a stab at him, but also a stab at the where pop music had gone, where it was all this pre-programmed, you know, they had the hologram in there with Adam Levine and all of these things where you had to have a rapper in your group with you. And I think, honestly, and I'm not making a reference on how the state of music is, but I think things have progressed actually downhill a little ways. You have some really good artists that are out there, but there are others that piggyback off on the really good artist and they just become clones. And then the music industry just pushes out a bazillion Billie Eilish and Post Malone clones that aren't nearly as good, because a copy of a copy of a copy, it just steadily degrades. And I think if it keeps going this way, I think Popstar will be even more relevant as a film, because a lot of these people that they're bringing up aren't ready for fame. And I think that's one of the things that they explore in this film, even though it's not a serious film at all. It does explore how fame can come very quickly and it can be taken away from you very quickly, depending on how you react to achieving that fame. You know, Connor for real, Andy Samberg's character. It's a great name. So he finds immediate success with the Style Boys, with his rap group. It goes to his head. He does a solo record and then alienates the entire group, tries to take credit for everything, and becomes so inflated with his own ego. Yes, it's funny, but ultimately, when his time is up, which is how the music industry treats people, he gets kicked to the curb and has to start back at square one. So there is even though the movie is a laugh a minute, there is a semblance of a message in there about what, you know, young artists have to go through. It's very interesting.
And it's good. It's easy for them to maybe put that critique into the world without fear of repercussions from the music industry, because they are actors, writers, and comedians who also happen to do music. Mm-hmm. And so their careers aren't kind of, you know, at the teat of music industry. And so you can be a little more harsh in your critique or your satire or whatever it is. I would just go back to something, because, and this is a common thing, especially for people of our age, and at this point I will lump you and I together, is there is what you described of, you know, talented artists, and then there's kind of the copycats, and there's people not ready for fame, and, you know, I haven't heard you say this, but people will say music today sucks and all the music from back then. We've got to look at our survivorship bias of the reason we remember the Led Zeppelins and the Beatles, and we don't remember the fucking other 100 groups. You know, watch that thing you do. There were hundreds of regional, thousands of regional one-hit wonders, or Oneaters, as they call it in the right movie, that we just don't remember today because they didn't stand the test of time. In 30 years, there will be a select few artists from this generation who, you know, Eller and Greer, my, you know, two littlest ones, that they will make it a point to listen to, like I make it a point to listen to the Beatles or Eric Clapton or something like that. And so, I mean, I think if you're a person, not you, but the general you, who thinks that music's getting worse, I think that is false. We've talked before about how, like when Michael Jackson got famous, pop culture was very kind of singular at that time. There weren't as many media outlets for you. You didn't have the internet. And so kind of everybody gravitated towards one thing, and then we collectively moved to the next thing, and we collectively,
right?
And now, you know, you can, everybody I mean, A, it's a level of access that we didn't have before. You don't have to go to a studio and pay for studio time and pay for studio musicians. And to do all that, you can be a creative individual or, guess what, a not creative individual and make music and get it out into the world. And there's success stories of people who did that without any record label stuff, support. And as a consumer, you can find good music.
Right.
If you know what you already like, then you can certainly, if you're willing to, within an hour, find something similar that you've never heard before that makes you go, oh, shit, you know?
Yeah.
And so it gets a little bit old man yells at cloud.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes when I, you know, Led Zeppelin never had a number one hit. You know, the Archies did with fucking
Sugar Sugar, baby.
Sugar Sugar, right? I mean, one of the shitty. And people who go, you know, well, music's getting worse. Like, that song is the worst song. And so
I would say it's the worst, but it, you know, it's.
But it's you know,
bubblegum pop, and we still have that today. And I think that, yeah, I never want to be the guy that says music today sucks because it isn't my music. And I never want to be the guy that's not willing to try to listen to something new. I worked in radio for a while, and so you always hear new stuff. And so you either have to, you know, get used to it and like it, or adapt, or just quit. And so, but what I, the point I was trying to make was, I think that what's gotten worse is not necessarily the music. What's gotten worse is the way the industry is, and the way they treat artists, and the way they promote artists, and what they do with, like, a lot of bands, like real bands that play real instruments, get kind of pushed to the side in favor of cheaper, easier marketing artists that they can just pump out. And you have some great new artists today. Like you said, Led Zeppelin to us is one of the pinnacles, and there was a lot of also-rans. You have that today as well. You have those that set the standard, and then you have those that fall by the wayside. And I think, like, you know, Popstar, the movie, it really showcases that. And what I like about the finale is when they get to the heart of it and they reunite and they rediscover what? Their love of music.
The fun of it. The camaraderie. And
it's, it's really important to the whole message of the film, is that that's what the whole thing should be about. And honestly, if you know anything about the Lonely Island, they love music. They love performing. They love, it's fun for them. You know, you get the big finale where they reunite and they perform at the Poppy Awards, which is just great. But it's a fantastic film. So in this bracket, my side of the bracket, we'll go ahead and vote. We have an audience vote out there. A poll has been put out on both our Facebook page and the Jarrett Goes to the Movies Facebook page. So
you already know the winner.
I do, but I haven't looked at it recently. I looked at it this morning. I haven't looked at them recently.
Was it close when you looked?
I'm not going to say. I'm just going to look. Let's just vote, because we kind of know what we're going to vote for. Since it's my side of the bracket, I think the way we've done it is I've gone first. I'm definitely voting for Popstar. I love Deep Blue Sea, but it's a special film. It's one that you can always watch, and even if you only watch it for 15 minutes, that's a unique thing about it. You can just watch a couple of clips and really enjoy it. You don't have to watch the whole thing and then go in and out. So I go with Popstar. Never stopping with the Lonely Island is my vote for to get into the finals.
And what you just described has been kind of my threshold for guilty pleasures, in that I'm scanning through the TV Guide, which they actually have on the TV now. You don't have to just have the little magazine.
I miss the magazine. Let's just talk about that for a second.
I only read it for the articles, Greg.
No, that was Playboy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, I read that for the bush and the cities. Okay. So
I thought that was TV Guide.
Well, when
Linda Carter was on the cover.
Yeah, I was going to say, who was the girl who played Daisy Duke? I don't remember.
Yep. Barbara Bach. Yeah. Yeah. Daisy Duke.
So that you can and in the 15 minutes you're watching while you're folding laundry, doing mindless, you know, house chores or whatever. And so pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping fits that threshold for me. And besides the fact, like I said from the top, it was the most fun, enjoyable movie to sit through and watch. So it definitely gets my vote too. I figured that's where we were going to end up for that, for your side of the bracket.
And I appreciate that. Yeah. So the winner is Pop Star of, to get into the finals, the final two, Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping, gets into our final bracket, which brings us to your side of the bracket and the last two movies to go head to head to get into the finals. And that is Moulin Rouge and Legally Blonde. And so I'm going to let you take over here and start making your case for either or.
Well, I don't want to make a case for either one. I remember when we watched Legally Blonde, it went up against Devil Wears Prada. And I like both of those movies. They, they're different, but as far as a 48-year-old middle-aged man liking both of them, they have that in common, that that would probably be uncommon, right? But Legally Blonde is the reason that I chose this category, because I was scrolling through the TV one day with a basket of clothes to fold and went, oh shit, Legally Blonde's on, and like turned it on, and it was midway through the movie, and I just happily folded my clothes while Elle Woods, you know, learns to become a lawyer and presents the court case at the end. And if I were folding another load of laundry tomorrow and I turned on the TV and Legally Blonde were on, I'd stop it again, and wherever in the movie it was, I would watch it.
Yeah.
It is fun, and ipso facto, okay, so this is what I was going to do, and then I totally forgot about it, Greg, is when we did Legally Blonde, I was going to have a Wikipedia page up with, like, all these legal, like, Latin terms,
okay,
and I was just going to, like, use them the whole fucking time. Like,
and you forgot?
Nunc pro tunc and ipso facto and, like, all this stuff. Yeah, and then I forgot.
Carpe diem.
I think that is from Dead Poets Society. Okay.
I knew it was Latin, though, isn't it? Yeah.
Sounds like it.
Pluribus unum.
Yeah, of one many, or
out of many one. Yeah.
So, you know, I Legally Blonde for me, like I said, it's the reason that I chose the category,
right?
Because I did. I do stand there and go, man, you love this movie a lot more than you probably should, and that was really kind of the definition of guilty pleasure for me. But I think we agreed that Legally Blonde just has enough of some of those basic elements that draw our interest as viewers in movies. And it was like fish out of water for a lot of reasons, like moving from the West Coast to a stuffy East Coast college.
Right.
Being a fashion merchandising major in college to going to law school. So we liked that. It's an underdog story. There's some elements of getting back at the one who did you wrong. And so she's kind of sets out to prove to her boyfriend that she's worthy of his love. And by the end, she learned to love herself. Mm. And Greg, I think we all learned a valuable lesson as Elle did that.
I learned to love myself. Well, I think I was around 12.
12.
When I learned to love myself.
Yeah. I was one when you did that.
I think you should love yourself at least once a day.
Just take a little time for yourself. Yeah. Every time my therapist is like, what have you done for yourself this week? And I'm like, and she's like, not that, Eric.
Oh, what else is there?
You know, if I knew, I wouldn't still be in therapy 5 years later. But so I think it has all of these elements combined. It is silly, but it's heartwarming. I think the movie's heartwarming. I think it has a lot of heart. I think that if they can make a character like Elle Woods, who seems spoiled and who seems kind of clueless and like everything's handed to her because she's pretty, and it'd be easy to think that that's this kind of character that you're getting, but she's not. She's hardworking. She's motivated. She is kind. She wants to help others. And I don't know. I think just in a time where everything feels like it's gone crazy or a little unwell. And I know, Greg, that right now you won't tell, but in a while, maybe you'll see a different side of me.
He did not do that song, by the way, and I was very disappointed. I wanted to hear that one.
That's a bummer.
Unwell. Rob Thomas.
So, I mean, what did you think? I know that you liked it because I know you voted for it over Devil Wears Prada. What was it about?
Yeah. What wasn't just that Devil Wears Prada, like, gave me PTSD from.
Yes,
just
I do recall now that just that the was not enjoyable. The
freaking abuse. But. And now they're making a second one that I'm going to have to subject myself to, I guess, when it comes out, because my wife will want to see it. But no, Legally Blonde, one of the things that is amazing about the film, and it doesn't break any real new ground in the comedy department. It is a formula style, but to me, it's actually a throwback to like movies from the comedies of like the 40s and 50s. Where you had a character that would decide to go to law school or, you know, become something that is beyond their original scope. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Mr. Blandings builds his dream house and all these things, and these movies where you had this character with big dreams that would set out to with the goal to achieve them. That's the standard plot of a lot of films, is you've got your protagonist. What is their goal? And Elle Woods' goal is originally, like you said, to win her boyfriend back by proving herself as not only intelligent as he is, but a good lawyer and that can compete with him. And then she realizes that she really just needed, and that's the way these movies work. She really just needed to, you know, believe in herself and be able to overcome it. And all that is really fits really well. It's not so much that it breaks any new ground. I can watch the same type of film over and over again. It's how you execute it.
Yeah.
Is the dialogue funny? Are the supporting characters, like we've got on the screen, the image of Jennifer Coolidge in one of her earlier roles, are the supporting characters a joy to watch? And in this case, yes. Even the Chihuahua is a joy to watch.
Bruiser, yeah.
Bruiser. So it's like...
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's a good point, Greg, because... It's kind of like I can eat a chocolate cake from just about anywhere.
Yeah.
But put some icing on it, you know, and maybe that's the differentiator between, you know, this. So, I mean, this movie is 90% exactly what you would expect of this style, this type, this sort of movie at the time that it came out. But it is woven together, like you said, with an assorting, a supporting cast that is really phenomenal, with enough little humorous bon mots, it makes you want to root for her, and it makes you engaged in the story. And like any good legal, you know, movie or TV show, we get our big courtroom payoff.
Oh, scene. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah. I remember watching, and I mean, I must have been a kid because it was at my grandparents' house and they were watching Matlock, I think, the old one with Andy Griffith. And I remember that Matlock is in the courtroom and I don't know, the guy suing his client had a neck brace on, you know, and he was moving around.
That old gag.
His neck was hurt. And at some point, Matlock threw his briefcase down on the ground. It made a big noise. And I mean, that guy's head turned around to look at it, and the case is won.
Aha.
Yeah. Big aha moment. And we get that with this. And it's like, I didn't even realize I was invested in the lawsuit part of it.
Yeah.
You know, but then I'm like, no, well, okay, what's she going to do? And so the payoff to this is that her knowledge of the beauty industry and her knowledge of getting your hair permed pays off in a courtroom setting. So that's funny. It's unexpected. It gives us the big, like, payoff moment. Yeah. I think it's a worthy watch. I don't know anybody who watches this and goes, hated it. stupid piece of shit.
Yeah, you know? I mean, even if you're a dude and these aren't your type of movies, but your girlfriend or your wife or your significant other, your partner says, hey, let's watch this, I want you to watch this with me, you're gonna find something to enjoy out of this film.
I told my dad we were doing that movie, and he goes, I love that movie. 79.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you know, it is like one of the movies I when I talk about it being a throwback, and that's a total compliment. Like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with Jimmy Stewart, where he's the kind of rube, and he ends up getting elected to Congress. And it's a fantastic film. I remember seeing it when I was young. I think I had to see it as part of school. And I was fascinated by this black and white film and Jimmy Stewart's performances, because when I was a kid, I'd seen It's a Wonderful Life. What kid hadn't? But I saw him in something else, and I thought it was great. And this kind of has those elements. Yeah, it's not the same type of humor. This is, you know, more of modern for that era, but it does really, really work. So it is funny that, you know, you have these two movies in your finals on your guilty pleasures that are kind of polar opposites, similar to my final two, because Moulin Rouge is your other selection. Yeah. Well, made it to the finals. That was one of your four selections. So,
yeah, Moulin Rouge. I mean, I think if I'm being honest or subjective, I mean, I think Moulin Rouge is the best movie of the eight that we watched.
Okay,
I think Baz Luhrmann is fantastic. I think that this story, the acting, the cinematography, the art direction, the music, I mean, I think it comes together spectacularly. The vignettes, the looking into the past, the looking into the future, the way that the story is told, you know, from kind of a first person point of view, because he's typing, you know, with the opening scene, he's typing, mm-hmm. and he says, you know, that Satine is the woman I love is dead. And you're like, I'm like 1 minute into this, like, what a fucking downer. And in a lot of ways, the movie is a fucking downer.
Yeah.
And I mean, I already cry a lot, but like, I cry every time I watch this movie. And I think take all of the elements, and you're kind of the more learned between the two of us when it comes to the cinematic arts, because you have a double doctorate.
Yes.
Triple masters in cinematic arts. But I think if you take all of those elements of what is supposed to make a film good or bad, you know, that you learned about from your professors in grad school, what makes a film good? Well, it's conflict. Well, it's character development. Well, it's the setting is really important. How do your characters interact with that setting? All of the things that go along with it. And I think of the eight movies, this one does that the best. It's a guilty pleasure for me because I doubt that there are many, again, 48-year-old heterosexual males who watch this movie and are as taken by it as I am. I mean, even if you like it, I doubt that A, I was the target demographic, and B, that it would just have such a like ethereal connection that you find with movies like that sometimes. I had the same type of connection with Good Will Hunting. Mm-hmm. Oh, Stellan Skarsgård is in that too. Mm-hmm. You know, that movie, when I saw it, really, and I have seen, if it's not one of the Star Wars movies and it's not Moulin Rouge, then Good Will Hunting is probably the movie I've seen the most times in my entire life. And that movie does the same thing for me. It really draws me in. I really get kind of emotionally invested in it.
Yeah.
I identify very much with the Will Hunting character in that movie.
Because you're a janitor?
Because I'm a genius.
Oh, okay. I thought it was because you like to mop the floor.
An unrecognized genius, not using his talents at all. And so, yeah, I mean, that's why it got on the list. And it beat out Dude, Where's My Car, which... You know, I'm not sure that when you're voting for guilty pleasures that you have to vote for the better movie.
Right.
Because, do you know what I mean?
So, yeah, no, I hear you. Yeah.
And every other category we've done, I mean, the movies have all been similar or similarly situated, like with David Lynch or whatever.
Or within the same genre. So we have something to compare them to.
Trying to find the best movie.
Yeah.
Or in one of the cases, we were trying to find objectively the worst movie.
Right.
But when you're debating guilty pleasure, I'm not sure you have to pick the best movie. You have to pick the best guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
And as I talk through that, I'm sitting there going, well, I mean, isn't Dude, Where's My Car kind of the better guilty pleasure movie between the two of them? You know,
maybe at the time, I think when we did the episode for Moulin Rouge, it gave you an opportunity to discuss what you loved about it so much, you know, what you loved about the movie. And I think that kind of overwhelmed the discussion.
It did.
And it kind of, Dude, Where's My Car is so simplistically silly that it overshadowed it in when we voted. Coming into the finals, when we're looking at these four films, yeah, it's like the old Sesame Street thing. One of these kids is doing his own thing. And then Moulin Rouge is different from the other three films for sure, because one, you have the lighthearted comedy in Legally Blonde, the slapsticky over-the-top comedy in Popstar, and the subtle tongue-in-cheek comedy of Deep Blue Sea. So three really kind of funny films with a different type of humor, but all have this kind of mirthfulness about them that make them a guilty pleasure. And Moulin Rouge on the contrast is heavy.
It is. And the only laughs you get are just very sparingly splattered here and there to keep you from wanting to off yourself. Like, they know that they're dragging you far enough down to where. And so John Leguizamo does a really good job of being the like comic relief in that, weaving the story of their, you know, falling in love and the development of that relationship in parallel with the play that they're putting on. And so when you recognize those things that are happening kind of in tandem and in parallel, sometimes that'll give you a little chuckle. Sometimes the music, you know, we talk about there's a tower scene where they're going to have dinner in the tower. And that is a fucking like intense part of that movie.
Yeah.
We get the Roxanne tango, which is really like aggressive and dark. There is the scene where the Duke is, abusive towards Satine.
Right.
And in the midst of all this, we get Ziegler doing a song and dance number to Madonna's Like a Virgin.
Yeah.
And the way that it's delivered is really funny. And I just think that it takes some, I mean, I think of all the films, it was definitely the most courageous of the movies. I think it really, like I said, I mean, I think it checks the boxes for, this is more than just a good guilty pleasure movie. This is a really good movie. Right. I think that's probably where we were at.
Yeah.
Versus Dude, Where's My Car? I mean, I will still watch Dude, Where's My Car also anytime it comes on TV because like you said, the humor was really simple, and like Popstar and like Deep Blue Sea, honestly, it's not trying to do anything but be silly.
Exactly.
I mean, this is my side of the bracket. I'm happy to go first on this.
Yeah, for sure.
I do think Moulin Rouge is the shining star of this group of eight as far as the movies is concerned. But when I look at it through strictly the lens of we are trying to find the best guilty pleasure movie, I think it's Legally Blonde for me. So I'm going to go Legally Blonde over Moulin Rouge. Again, I think Moulin Rouge is the better movie.
Right.
But I think Legally Blonde is the better guilty pleasure movie, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. And I think you said everything kind of needs to be said on it. It is a very creatively well done film. Moulin Rouge is, but you know, these are your guilty pleasure movies. These are movies that are important to you, but would they be guilty pleasures for other people? I think Moulin Rouge is one of those movies that anybody can get into, but it's not something everybody can get into right now.
Yeah.
You know, like at this moment, whereas Legally Blonde, it's one of those that if it's on, if you're over at somebody's house and it's on in the background, you might catch yourself just sneaking a couple of peeks at it just for a chuckle because you know the movie. Or if you've never seen it and you see it on there, it might catch your attention. Moulin Rouge, on the other hand, it may not. You need to sit down and actually pay attention to that to get everything it's trying to do. So while Baz Luhrmann is a genius, if you like his films, and I do, I think you're right, and I'm going to vote for Legally Blonde as well. So there you have it. I think we've got our two finalists in the.
Who did the audience vote for on each of these?
I will tell you when we get done with the finals, because what I did. So Legally Blonde, everybody, yay! Here's your finals. It is Popstar and Legally Blonde in the final two of the guilty pleasures for here on Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. Yes, so I would give the results, but what I did was I made it easy on everybody. I just put all four movies and just say, hey, vote for your favorite.
Oh, gotcha.
And that way I could just tally the votes if I needed to in any case of a tie break. So it's still active going into this final where the audience vote could determine it. So far we've agreed on both the final four rounds, but now we're in the finals and it's my movie. This is the first time each of our movies have gone head to head.
Hey, do you want to give them the contact information while I go get a refill on coffee?
All right. Yeah, so when Eric gets back, we are going to talk about... Go ahead.
I just got to mute. Just give me a second.
Okay. So when Eric gets back, we are going to discuss the final two of the guilty pleasures. And this has come down to the first time Eric's and mine have gone head-to-head, because we've had separated these movies on each side of the bracket. So that being said, when Eric gets back, we will discuss the final two and the guilty pleasures of Box Office Battles. Is Popstar Never Stopping against Legally Blonde, and we'll see who wins. If you are watching us on YouTube or Facebook Live or Twitch, go ahead and drop in the comments which one of these that you prefer, Popstar or Legally Blonde. We could add it to the vote tally that we, in case Eric and I don't agree. There's a good chance we might not agree at who the winner of this is. If you like Box Office Battles, though, and you're listening to us on your podcast provider like Spotify or Amazon Music or Apple Podcasts or so many others, we're on Stitcher as well, do us a favor and tell others about it. Have them subscribe so we can get our numbers up in that. Also, make sure you leave a comment on our episodes, our podcast episodes. We want to thank everybody who listens, and whether it's in their car, at work, wherever, our numbers are going up as far as the streaming, and we really appreciate that as far as those that just listen to it and don't catch the live stream. For all of those that do watch us on the live stream, thank you as well. It's nice to have you guys here each and every week. If you want to reach out to us about anything at all with the show, you can email us at boxofficebattles@gmail.com. You can also, like I said, go to Twitch at Box Office Battle Pod, and you can also leave comments and messages and suggestions on YouTube at Box Office Battle Podcast. Same thing with Facebook. Just look for Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. And speaking of Eric, he has returned to his seat.
Is my mic working?
Yeah, it is. I didn't know if you unmuted. I didn't know if you unmuted yourself.
No, I don't know. usually the light is on. I don't know. I have enough fucking problems as it is. I don't need this shitty microphone. Fucking not working.
All right, let's get to it.
Thank you for sharing all of that with the fine folks.
Yes.
You've handled Skitcher and
all of them.
Twitch and YouTube. Catch us on Valongo and I don't know, just make up any fucking name, and there's a streaming service that
okay, now just making shit up
somewhere related to that. Check Greg out on Grindr if you're ever in the Columbus area and or yeah. Dayton or wherever. All right, yeah, I mean, we got to get to the winner here. I mean, this is kind of the part where we've discussed the merits of
yes
all of these films. I'm feeling a lot, Greg. Do you want to get into it?
I want to get into you.
Oh, yeah.
No, me that, too. That came maybe out wrong.
Maybe that would cure all of my problems.
We'll see. All right. Well, let's talk about these two. Yeah, I mean, we don't have to go into any more detail. This is it. We've seen all the films. We've broken them down. We've discussed them. You know, Pop Stars on my side of the bracket, Legally Blonde's on yours. They're both comedies. They're both fun. They're both, you know, something that would cheer you up on a dark and dreary day. But which one is the better guilty pleasure? And I can let you make your argument for Legally Blonde first if you want, or for a Pop Star. It's up to you.
If I had to argue one over the other, I would be arguing Pop Star over Legally Blonde.
Really?
I just didn't know that movie existed. I mean, I've seen it now.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, first of all, it's just my style of humor. It's, those guys are funny to me. I have thought they were funny since whatever the first one of their things was. If it was I'm on a Boat, or if it was the Captain Jack Sparrow with Michael
Bolton. Oh, that's a good one, yeah.
I mean, you know, Happy Birthday to the Ground. I mean, everything is just so fucking funny. Oh, it says, Eric, you just love the limo scene the most. Yes.
We discussed that during the episode. We broke it down. We actually have a reel, if you liked. If you want to see Eric enjoying the limo scene,
and it just flops over.
If you want to see Eric enjoy the limo scene, look that up on TikTok on our site as well for Box Office Battles, and you will see Eric.
It is not the only part I like, but it was definitely my favorite part, probably because of the penis. I mean, the penis wasn't hard, so wasn't great. but boy can I relate, you know, at my age anyway. So I suggested the category to you because of Legally Blonde. It's, I think, a good barometer, or maybe it's pronounced thermometer, I don't know, for like what a guilty pleasure is,
right?
But I mean, when I watched Pop Star, and as we've been talking about it, like, if Moulin Rouge is the best movie of all of these, Pop Star is the funniest of all of the eight we watched. It put me in a good mood. I would 1,000% stop down for that, like, happily, probably more happily than any of the others. Now, maybe it's because I've seen Legally Blonde, I mean, it's got to be 50 times.
Right.
And so maybe if I'm thumbing through the TV guide on the screen, it's like actually like on your television inside the screen, I believe, is where it is.
Okay.
And if they were like on channel number 2 and channel number 3, I think at this point in time, I would click on whichever channel Pop Star Never Stop, Never Stopping was on. I mean, that was a good choice, Greg. It clicked. it checks every box for what's funny, for just, it's zany and it's one-liners and it's gross-out humor and it's just a combination. And it's three guys who I consider to be really talented comedians. They've got a really firm grasp on satire. They're good musicians. I mean, the whole thing is just, it's like perfectly suited for something I would like. So, I mean, really, I know that Legally Blonde is my side of the bracket, but I would have to argue that, and I would have to vote for Popstar being the winner of this bracket.
Nice. I am glad. One of the things that's fun about doing this podcast with you is that, like I said, I grew up in a movie theater. You know, that's where my dad would kind of dump me on the weekend. So, and I loved it. I'm not going to lie. I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me. But I grew up from the time I was very young going to the movies every weekend, sometimes two or three movies a weekend. And I never stopped doing that over my life. I don't do it as much these days because we have streaming, so I can watch as many movies as I want at home. But I do love the theater experience. And to introduce somebody to a movie that you enjoy is a very fun thing. It's one of those things that cracks me up. It's really hard to introduce somebody to a movie and then watch it with them because you get the whole thing where you're staring at them, like, are they laughing at it? And then you're laughing and kind of waiting. So just to be able to give it to you and then let you experience it on your own and then get feedback from you on it and found out that you really enjoy it as much as I did, that's a lot of fun. What's interesting is I watched Legally Blonde when it came out, and I remember enjoying it. And this is back, you know, early 2000 when it came out. I had not watched it since then. So this was like going into it almost brand new again. I remember the basic concepts, but I don't remember a lot of the gags.
Yeah.
And I have to say that when I look at these two movies and I look at the category Guilty Pleasures, I adore Popstar. I think it is a phenomenally funny and creatively brilliantly, but it's not for everybody. Whereas Legally Blonde has this this kind of presence about it that makes it, I know it's about to happen what you think's about to happen. It has this feel about it that is very easy. It's like, you know, just getting a candy bar that it just hits the spot right when you want it. And it doesn't do too much. It doesn't try too hard. And that's kind of the magic of it, where it's just letting the each scene meld into the next one. I love films like that. I don't care if they're about a young girl that's into fashion or a kind of nerdy guy that's trying to make it like an old school, or one of my favorite films is Eurotrip, and which could have been a guilty pleasure. Eurotrip is, to me, one of the most outstanding comedies ever made. Maybe a guilty pleasure, I don't know, but it there's movies like that that you can put those on and they don't try too hard and they're just, anybody can like them. And as much as I love Popstar, I don't think it's for everybody. And I can't say that about Legally Blonde. I think Legally Blonde is something everybody can enjoy as a guilty pleasure movie. And I would be doing a disservice if I didn't vote. And I'm not doing it just because you voted for my side of the bracket. Yeah. I'm as surprised as you are that we're voting for each other's films.
It's like, wait a second, what's happening?
But I am voting Legally Blonde. So that means we do go to the audience vote, and I just double checked because I knew I was going to vote Legally Blonde, so I didn't know the outcome before I looked at it. And overwhelmingly, Legally Blonde is the favorite of all of the people on the Jericho's the Movies Facebook page, and on the my Facebook page, and on the Box Office Battles Facebook page. So Legally Blonde is a much loved film. I think it's everybody's kind of guilty pleasure in a way.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that is never been heralded as one of the greatest comedies of all time, but it doesn't have to be. It's just a fun movie. So let's declare it once and for all. Legally Blonde is the winner of our Guilty Pleasures bracket.
Yeah. That I voted against ends up being the winner. And I feel very lachrymose.
What, you can't drink milk?
I don't know. Dairy? I don't even know is that what it means.
Oh, okay. I thought it meant you couldn't have dairy.
It was on my word of the day calendar, but that was.
Are you lachrymose intolerant?
Yeah, I think so. I appreciate you like reasoning through that. I mean, I do agree that Legally Blonde is probably more like a, you know, a warm quilt or something you can wrap up in. Maybe just for me, it was like the enjoyment of watching Popstar, and probably there is a little bit of, you know, we talked about survivorship bias earlier, maybe a recency bias for me too, because I'd never seen that before. So to me, all of it was new. The whole thing was like, you know, and I remember when the advertisements were coming out for that, for Popstar, and thinking to myself, I would really want to see that because I like Andy Samberg. Yeah. I like The Lonely Island, and then just never did. So that I got an opportunity to do that. I'm appreciative to you for, but I think that probably played into it. It's like, well, Legally Blonde, I've seen 50 times, you know, it can live over here. But I can agree with, and I can appreciate your reasoning behind that. And obviously now I do wonder.
Yes.
I mean, I guarantee you, of all the people that voted on the various, you know, channels that we set up, I'm sure everybody's seen Legally Blonde.
Right.
I doubt everybody's seen Popstar.
That's a problem.
And I wonder if the vote would be different if we only let people vote
that have seen
who passed a test. Now, hear me out on this.
I don't think we can do that.
Right? Because. Yeah. Democracy is important.
Yes.
But it's not more important. No. It is important. But
yeah.
But to set up something where you had to have seen both in order to vote for one or the other. I don't know if it would have changed the results or not, but it would be interesting
I think the fact that people might have not seen it as much, it is not like known to have been a big box office success. Popstar never stopping. I think that speaks well why it shouldn't be the guilty pleasure winner as well. It's because it's just not out there in the zeitgeist for people to experience. Yeah. So it is kind of more underground. I like it that way. I can introduce people to it if they like it. But like I said earlier, it's just not for everybody. I'm careful to who I recommend it to. I got to know their sense of humor.
Yeah,
because there are certain people like in my family and friends that I would not recommend this movie to. Not just because it's raunchy or bad. It's just that's not their type of humor.
Yeah, like people that I know that I don't tell I have a podcast because I don't want them,
making waves.
Find out I make jokes about my Uncle Lonnie.
Exactly.
Very, very soft penis or whatever.
You're very soft, small,
it's so
micro
soft.
Penis.
It's just like, I mean, I wouldn't say it's micro. It's just like, hangs there. And, you know, like, I don't need everybody knowing that.
I've only heard that it's micro. I don't know for sure. But anyway.
Who'd you hear that from? Is it my uncle that told you that?
Uncle Lonnie, yeah.
I was drunk.
All right. We got one more round of business to do before we get out of here. And that is to reveal the movies that we're going to have in our next category. So in 2 weeks, we're going to have the first episode of the next category, which are the best movies about bands that don't really exist, that were created just for the movie. Now, there was a caveat to this. I put this out on our Facebook page to ask people just for ideas of what they might want to see in here, but there was criteria. The movie has to be centered on the band. It can't be where, like in Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the band is secondary to the film. They have the Sex Bomb in there, which is really funny. Or in The Rocker with Rainn Wilson, the band Vesuvius. Yes, that's cool, but that's not the theme of the movie.
Alvin and the Chipmunks, right?
Yes, that would technically count, to be honest with you, but it's not in our. So I'm going to reveal, starting with number 7, and there's a reason why we're revealing number 7 and not 8. We will get to that shortly. So let's start with the number 7 seed, all done by IMDb ratings, from 7 to number 1. These will be the movies that will battle it out in our best movies about fake bands. Number 7 is Eddie and the Cruisers from the 1980s. It's a pretty good film if you've never seen it. But Eddie and the Cruisers is number
7. Don't poison the well, Greg.
Why is that? I won't. But it is a good film. Eddie and the Cruisers, made in the 80s, about Eddie Wilson and his 60s band.
Yeah, he had it all.
He had it all. You see that on the poster. All right, number 6 is That Thing You Do.
Yes.
That Thing You Do will be a part of Fake Bands That Rock here on Box Office Battles as our 6th seed. The number 5 seed is The Five Heartbeats, which is a take on The Temptations. Great film from the 90s. A lot of good actors in there. Robert Townsend, Leon, several good actors. Good film. Number 4 is The Commitments. This is a movie about an Irish band that learns how to play soul, a la like the 60s soul singers, and they do it in Dublin. If you've never seen it, this is probably one of my favorite films about a band that doesn't really exist. This is the
Commitments. I've not seen 3 of these 4 so far. Well, so
you're in for a treat. Let's get to number 3. The number 3 seed is The Blues.
Oh, yeah, Brothers, of course.
A fake band. Now, they became a band after, but they were created as a skit. So this is The Blues Brothers will be our number 3 seed in Fake Bands That Rock.
Okay.
Number 2, Almost Famous in the band Stillwater. The movie centers on touring with Stillwater from beginning to end. The movie is about Stillwater. That's why it qualifies. Almost Famous is our number 2 seed. And I think a lot of people out there might know what the number 1 seed is. It's probably one of the most famous movies about a band that wasn't really a band, then kind of became a band. They have a sequel coming out in just a couple of weeks. That's right. This is Spinal Tap is the number 1 seed. The highest rated of these on IMDb, over Almost Famous, believe it or not. Very close. Actually,
it was just rated a 2-word review. Shit sandwich.
Exactly. So, yeah, with the new movie coming out, it's kind of appropriate that we're going to be covering This is Spinal Tap in our bracket. So let's take a look at the bracket itself. There, number 8, we don't really have an entry for yet, and I'll get to that. Here's the bracket with a question mark at number 8. We've got Spinal Tap at 1-2. Almost Famous will go up against Eddie and the Cruisers. Blues Brothers will go up against That Thing You Do. And The Commitments will go up against The Five Heartbeats. But who is going to take on Spinal Tap in the first round? We got to figure that out. We are going to have our very first on Box Office Battles play in battle. There is so many movies about bands. I put it out there, trying to get some ideas. I got some ideas, but there are ones that I couldn't pass up. So we are going to have 3 movies to watch between now and Wednesday, the 3rd of September.
Okay.
That will be our next show. We are going to watch the Chris Rock comedy CB4, which is actually a rap version of This is Spinal Tap, basically. It's a mockumentary about a rap group called CB4 with Chris Rock. It's a take on NWA. Fantastic film.
Rockstar. NWA.
You don't know what NWA is?
I mean, sounds familiar. I just don't know what it stands for.
Ninjas with Attitudes.
Oh, okay. That sounds pretty kick-ass.
It is. They do kick some ass. So that's going to be going up. We are going to do 3 movies in 1 episode and determine 1 winner of these 3, and that one will go on to face Spinal Tap in the first round. So this is a play-in game between CB4, Rockstar, with Mark Wahlberg, if you've never seen that. Very good film. Oh, see, you're good. You're all kinds of good stuff.
I mean, I think Spinal Tap and That Thing You Do and the Blues Brothers are the only ones I've seen out of all of these.
Well, there you go. You're going to have some fun.
Yeah.
These are really good films. And this one, these 3 are going to be kind of hard to choose from because the 3rd of the 3 is called Sing Street. It's a more recent film. It just became a musical, like a West End musical in London. And it's about a young Irish lad, again, Irish, I believe he's Irish, who is very much in love with this girl. She won't have anything to do with him until he starts a band.
Well, yeah.
Because that's what you do.
That's typically how it happens. How it's happened for me.
So these are really good films, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun with these. So join us for the first kind of play-in game of the fake bands that rock here on Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. Thank you to everybody who joined us tonight on the live stream. We really appreciate you being out here. Like I said, I gave all the contact information out earlier, but please make sure that you tell others about it and have them subscribe to either everything, the YouTube, the Twitch, the Facebook, the Spotify, the Amazon, the Apple, the Fellatio, the whatever else is out there.
Yeah, sign me up.
Sign him up. So anyway, that's it for Eric and I for this week. Legally Blonde, the winner of Guilty Pleasures. Next one, 3 September, Fake Bands at Rock. It was a lot of fun doing this. I really enjoyed the Guilty Pleasures and starting the new season with you. We're going to keep going onward and upward. Again, we appreciate everybody who joined us tonight and keep doing so. We love having you here in the studio. So with that being said, we will see everybody on 3rd of September. I will turn it over to Eric for his parting words of the evening.
We love you guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And until next time, whenever that may be, you guys remember, be excellent to each other. We'll see you then.
See you, everybody.